I'm a man. Yes, I am. Men, biblical manhood. This is something that we are addressing as a podcast this week. This is the Grace Hour Show. Welcome to those who are new, to those who subscribe and are a part of our regular production, regular shows that come on Monday through Friday. We're grateful for your support and your attention to our, you know, to what we have to offer from a biblical point of view. So I'm Pastor Steve Andrelonis with Greater Grace Church. With me today, Pastor Rinaldo Brown. We are, as we said, we're talking this week about this principle of biblical manhood. What does it mean? When you talk about manhood, it is really a, in Western civilization. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, you know this better than I do because you travel to other parts of the world mm-hmm. more than I do, that, you know, the concept of manhood and the assault on it, I don't know if that's a too small a word to use, but the, maybe, you know, it's sort of subtle. Maybe assault isn't, it's not, it's, you know, there's, but the questioning of manhood and what it is, it seems to be a real constant in Western civilization for some reason. And, but in other civilization, it's not. People pretty much know, you know, if you're in the Southeast Asia, if you're in Africa, if you're in South America, pretty much you understand the concept of manhood. But what does the Bible have to say about it? That's, you know, we're talking about protection and provision. Those are two big words. And, you know, just thinking about it, what does it mean to be a protector? And we have a really high standard. The bar is set way above. It's set, the bar for us is actually seated above. His name is Jesus, and Paul made this very clear statement in Ephesians 5 about men loving their wives. Mm-hmm. So the home is the primary battleground in terms of spiritual warfare there. It seems like it's always been like a primary battleground going back to the garden. It's like, you know, the serpent takes out the woman. And, you know, gets to her first and then brings about this disaster. So biblically, looking at this, Ephesians 5 says, men, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. So we do understand that two words, protection and also their provision, both encapsulated in that idea of Christ loving the church. He gave himself for it. Why? Because she needed rescue. Mm-hmm. We all needed rescue. We all needed redemption. And so when we understand the person of Christ, then we understand manhood as it was really designed to be. Maybe that's a big statement, but I said it.
I'll sit with you there. I feel as if the greatest examples of true manhood is found in the scriptures because the greatest example of man is found in the scriptures. I'd also say I think the world has decided to redefine not just genders, and we're there already, but go back to the 60s and the 70s. They began to redefine what a woman was as far as her role and her function in society. Now we're defining what she is physiologically. We were defining back then functionally. Yeah. And over the evolution of women over time, so too you cannot evolve the woman and you don't evolve the man.
Yeah.
And so I feel as if they've been sort of changing what the scriptures show a man should be by attacking the culture of manhood. They've also removed the spiritual identity of manhood so that the world is now telling the church what a man should and shouldn't be. And you hear it in conversations, okay, tell a man to be a man.
Yeah.
But then when he becomes a man, what you really want to say is be the kind of man I want you to be, not the kind of man that God has called you to be. And I was just thinking a lot of an analogy I want to make this afternoon. You may not know who Bill Sherman is. Bill Sherman was a not so known energy efficient scientist, and he decided to run some tests on the sealant for coolant and air conditioning systems. And one of the sealants he tested was duct tape. And what Max Sherman found out is that the worst sealant for HVAC is actually duct tape. He said the last thing you want to use for your ducts is duct tape. And he ran a lot of efficiency tests. It's the worst. He said, how did he get the name duct tape? I don't know. Okay. Then he asked him, what can you use it for? Anything but ducks. He said, do you use it? He goes, yes, I use it, but I don't use it for ducks. And how does that apply to today? Well, I'll just say this. Men are a lot like duct tape. We can do a lot of things, but we struggle to do what we're created for. We struggle to do what we're created for because we've let the world tell us what we were created for. We tell men who you are, what you should do, and we tell you, and it's so subjective because in one group that validates this is what manhood is, another group disqualifies the same validation. So it's a man walks here and says, so what is a man? Well, the man is, he's this. Okay, then when he's those things, the other group says, well, no, he can't be those things because that's not a man. So it's a man according to you. It's highly subjective and not scriptural. So I like the fact that you said, we're not talking about what's a real man? We're talking about what the Bible says is a man of God. And if you operate as a man of God, there will be some that will have issues with you. And there will be some that will support you. But in Galatians chapter 1, verse 10, am I persuaded of God or persuaded of man? So I want to walk as God says I should, as a man. Right? 1 Timothy 6, oh man of God, I want to walk as a man of God. Because that's what you were created to be. You were not created to please people, to please society, to please culture. But if you walk in the tenets that are revealed through the scriptures, you will be a man of God. And I like these two topics, a protector and provider, because I want to look at them not culturally, not nationally, not ethnically, but I want to look at them scripturally. What is God saying when he says, the man that I've created, the man that I've called to a specific purpose is a protector? What does that mean? I look at it like, again, we need another analogy here. If you ever played football, I played high school football. In football, there's one position that you don't really notice his position. You notice the influence of his position. That's the center. A man as a protector, he is a center. He operates like a center in football. What a center does is he occupies space, and the space he occupies creates space. So he eats up space from guys that are coming in to get the quarterback. So in one respect, he's protecting the quarterback by occupying space. Mm. And the quarterback can actually function in the space that he creates. So as a man functions and occupies his space in a responsible way, he creates space for those that he covers. As much as a wife helps her husband as a helpmeet, a husband creates space or an atmosphere where she can be that helpmeet.
Yeah.
A lot of men complain, well, you know, my wife doesn't do this. Well, have you created the space where she can do that? Have you done that? We have a responsibility as protectors to create the space, the atmosphere, as far as safety and security, and a lot of protection speaks about, number one, physical. Your children need to feel protected.
Yeah, safe.
Yeah, safe.
Safety.
Safe's a better word than protected, but you're safe. Like in the home and outside of the home.
Yeah.
There's huge damage psychologically when they don't have that. Mm. And a lot of the disunity in the house is because they don't feel safe, right? Not just in the house and not just in the family, but from you. How many of us grew up scared of our father? We didn't feel safe with our father. I mean, his job is to lead me, but not intimidate me. Mm. That's not a real man. Men don't lead by intimidation. They lead by investment. So I'm a protector because of the space I create is safe. Secondly, I would also say the space I protect against evil by creating a spiritual space. Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's a physical safety. Second of all, it's a spiritual safety. A lot of things as a husband and a father and a man that you allow in your home are sowing seeds of disunity and actually warfare, demonic warfare in your home, and you've invited it in, right? You are the high priest of your house. You are accountable and responsible for what you allow in your house. And your wife, and if you have children, or if you're by yourself, in the space where you occupy, you are accountable to God for what you allow into it. Ear gate, eye gate, atmosphere gate, you allow it in. So protector is important. I want to be that center that creates the space where those I love and those who live with me occupy in physical safety, spiritual safety, And I want to also say, and this is the hot one, I want to ask you about this one, emotional safety.
Emotional safety.
Because most of us, when you say emotions to men, most men, they're gone. What do you mean? What are you talking about? She's not crying. We're good. Mm-hmm. The rent is paid. You know, she looks healthy to me. So what is emotional safety?
Emotional safety, I would define it from my experiences, like an awareness of, like, you know, I mean, it could be small things mm-hmm. get under the skin, and it could be big things where you feel like, and it's not always so obvious all the time. That's the thing. It's like sometimes it's the atmosphere you've created, maybe physically. Are you present? Mm-hmm. Are you present enough that she can talk to you face to face rather than screen to screen? You know, that's one thing. So physical protection, am I present? Am I present in the home? And how much am I present? So this speaks to, like, you know, I understand the dynamic of what it takes to provide for a home nowadays. It takes, you know, money is a big issue, and it can be, you know, a lot of, you know, men and women both work to make the home financially stable. So I would say, you know, being present physically and then having a spiritual dynamic to your life, that's one thing. And then, like, this will give you an awareness and a discernment of the emotional triggers that, you know, it may take a while. Sometimes you may not even realize, a man, we are in somewhat insensitive. We were made for war. That's the thing. We were, man was, you know, man is designed to be, in a sense, less intuitive and sensitive because, you know, in the, down through the cultures, the years of cultures, he's had to participate in, aggressive and defensive warfare. And if he's, you know, if he's too distracted, he can't do what he's supposed to do. You know, so I think that's just a part of the design of God. I mean, I could, you know, you could argue about that with me, but I just know that, you know, we see in the Bible that there is a woman named Abigail who had great discernment as it regarded her husband.
Yeah.
And then also great discernment as it regarded David. She knew how to protect her husband from David's emotions, and she knew how to address David's emotions. So, I mean, David, you know, he told her, he said, thank God for you, because I needed you to tell me not to do what I was about to do, which would have been a disaster. Emotional protection, I think, is to provide, you know, presence, and then to provide space for that emotion to be released. That, like, not to allow her to bottle it up anything.
That goes back to my thought about creating space.
Creating space.
One of the things I think husbands struggle with, the emotional side of relationships, particularly in marriage.
We just try to duct tape it up.
You
can't just wrap a duct tape. Yeah, it's fine. It's going to be good.
Hillbilly Chrome. Duct tape. Hillbilly Chrome.
There we go.
Put it on anything. But it's like, I think because we're not as emotional as a woman, it's an area that's not a strength for us. So what's so interesting is we don't relate well emotionally. We're not great conversationalists for the most part. So to be emotionally, to create an emotional space, sometimes less is more. We feel we have to do a lot or say a lot. And you can create emotional safety as a man, as a real man, without having to be hyperly emotional.
That's right.
Because the society says, if you're not emotional, you're a bad man. You know, you're not sensitive. You're not, oh my God, I think he cried. There was a season in Hollywood where any actor who cried was considered to be a real man. He was a man's man because he wept and he was soft and he was gentle. And I don't think that's what the scriptures are digging at. I don't think the scriptures are saying, you know what, you need to soften yourself in order to reach people. Christ was full of compassion, but he would never say that Christ was soft. Christ, like, he did weep at Lazarus' death. He had compassion on the rich young ruler, but they don't see these overt streams of emotion. But I like the idea of the man creating a safe space as far as for someone if they when they're going through something to have compassion. I like the idea of being observant to discern in 1 Corinthians 2:14 to discern capacity, like you said, like okay, how to speak, when to speak, it creates space to speak, or I would use the word approachable. To be commensurate with what someone's going through, to empathy. Those are it. You can be those things without, you know, wearing soft colors and speaking low and being a soft. You don't have to be soft to be spiritual. So I want to say that because that's what the world says. To be socially acceptable, there has to be a measure of softness about you. Otherwise, you're too hard for relationship. You're too hard for marriage. You're too hard. And I don't, the scriptures don't define that. The scriptures don't give that. And I'm sure some listeners may not agree with me. I mean, you may feel like he's got to be softer and more emotional to be a qualified spouse or to understand me. And I don't agree with that. That the scriptures don't support that image. That's the world softening man to ultimately change his gender. You can't make a man a woman, and you can't make a woman a man. So controversially, I'll say
you're saying something controversial, but that's okay.
I don't want to lean into that, and I don't want to lean into that and say, okay, so you've got to be this, you know. And I don't like the world bullying the church and telling the church who they have to be. You have to be this because this is more socially acceptable. But I'd rather be spiritually responsible.
That's a good one. I think what you're saying is like there is a David wrote a broken and contrite heart, God will not despise. So we understand, I think the tenderness, the gentleness that makes great has to be in the right places, is what you're saying. It's like, you're right. You're saying, overly, emotion swings across the big spectrum, big spectrum, outrage and anger that, becomes abusive is an emotional dictatorship. It's an emotional tyranny that can be exercised in the home. And as a result, you're not providing, like you said, the space. You're not providing the protection. You're not providing the emotional security, the emotional safety. Like, I like the way that Jesus said that I wanted to gather you. When he's speaking, looking over and weeping over Jerusalem, he said, I wanted to gather you as a hen gathers you under its wings. So we're seeing that, what is our point? Romans 8, we are to become more like Christ. This is really what we are. We are to be transformed in our mind, conformed to his image. And as we are conformed to his image, then we become the real, we represent the real image that God had for who he made in the garden. The second Adam is to be our guide, and he gave us something in us, the Holy Spirit. He sent the Holy Spirit because he did live out that kind of thing. That's what I'm thinking is like for each of us, for each of us, men and women, we are called to be like Christ, more and more like Christ, and how, our devotion to that part will affect the way that we are as men, how we protect, how we provide. And, there is a difference between a dominator, a dictator, and godly leadership,
You know where I'm going.
Yeah, I know. And
I want to be the quarterback.
I know. So, I mean, I've heard this described by, I think it's G. Campbell Morgan.
Okay.
He describes the government of God. Okay. So if the government in our home and our churches and any kind of society or community function, any time of fellowship, if it's godly leadership, what G. Campbell Morgan says, it's not dictatorial. I've heard somebody say, God is a benevolent dictator, but G. Campbell Morgan says, no, he's a poet. And what does that mean? Well, a poet, we think of poet, roses are red, violets are blue, my feet stink, and so do you. That's like, that's a doggerel. That's not poetic. That's like, we think of rhythm and rhyme.
Yeah.
But really, in poetic leadership, God, You know, God is really still defined by what he decreed. Mm-hmm. And the reason for the cross is he decreed that no one unholy or unclean could abide in his presence unless something innocent paid for that sin,
yes,
the smallest sin. So Jesus went to the cross, and its violence, speaks of the levels of sin. Mm-hmm. And it also speaks of just how important it was for Jesus to die the way that he died. Mm. And so I think God is poetic. He decreed what he decreed, and he in humility follows his decree. He just doesn't change the rule willy nilly. Mm-hmm. And so that's, if you are in a home, you are present and you are also secure in who you are. So that creates your emotional security. Mm-hmm. And then, because you are emotionally secure and you're spiritually submitted to the throne of God, then this creates, protection, and the leadership that you have is not a dominating leadership. Mm-hmm. It's poetic. You mean what you say. It also has flair to it. It has all those things. It has charisma. It has character. It has all those things. And that is like, I'm going to use a word here that people, see in a variety of ways, but there is like John Maxwell, leadership guru, wrote a lot of leadership books, a Bible on it, and a great devotional on it. But he defines anointed leadership as leadership that has character, has consistency, has capacity, has commitment, and charisma. It invites people to draw near to it, and capability, like all those things going, all these C's he's using in this. He's saying but there's a grace orientation, charisma, the first, the first six letters are charis, which is grace in the Greek. So if you have that in your leadership, then it'll be poetic. It'll be, Jesus spoke in many parables. Mm-hmm. They're figures of speech. This kind of I like your analogies are great. You're being poetic and parabolic. There we go.
Well, I would say my detractors say I'm more parabolic than poetic. But most men, when they think of, back to my football analogy.
There you go. Okay, the center touches the ball.
Here's the problem. I don't want to be the center. I want to be the quarterback.
Ooh.
And that's the problem with most men. They see the position of head of house, head of marriage, head of family. I'm the quarterback.
Run all the plays.
I'm running all the plays. I'm in charge. And that leads to dictatorial dominance, right? Mm,
yeah.
But the center, he leads without all the attention.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not in a position. He leads sacrificially. Now, you cannot say a quarterback is sacrificial. But you can say a center is sacrificial.
That's
when you see a center take out two guys trying to rush the quarterback, he lays down his life. Literally, a lot of centers, I watch guys go horizontal in high school football to take out two guys to create the space so the quarterback can operate. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not suggesting that the wife is the quarterback, but what I am saying is, I think God is the quarterback. Yeah. And I think the center is more of the man. He leads sacrificially. And that's what really taps into this protector role. It's sacrificial.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, my grandfather always talked about going to work. When he went to go to work, he would just picture his family. And he said, I make the sacrifice to work 4 hours of overtime because I'm the protector of this family. I'm the protector of so that financial ruin doesn't happen, which kind of leads into our next point about providing. I mean, part of the provision of a husband, of a man, is he's a provider.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that he provides, but he's a provider. Protection's one of them. So really our two thoughts today are kind of married a little bit.
Yeah.
We talked about protector first, but being a provider, what does that mean? And that's a sensitive word in Christian circles.
It is.
Because the world, the economy of the world has changed. The function of the husband and the wife has adapted. It's just called
adapted.
A little bit fluid.
It's adaptable. Okay. Yeah, fluid. Yeah.
And I'll give you an example of that. And then we'll get into it. In Africa, in the, I want to say, 60s and 70s, men led. They were the breadwinners.
Yeah.
Women didn't work at all. Yeah. So if school fees got paid, he paid them. If rent was paid, he paid them. If food was bought, he paid them. African women would wait at home for money to come. And then suddenly, two things happened. it became entrepreneurial. So then wives found that I could sell green peppers and tomatoes outside my house and make money from that. I could sew and make money. They became entrepreneurial. So they started bringing in money. Simultaneously, many of the old factory and jobs that were existing for the men disappeared.
Yeah.
So when the men started losing jobs and the women started making money entrepreneurially, all of a sudden you found out, and the kids saw a coup. They saw a coup come in the house, like, oh, mom's now buying the food and mom just paid the rent. And men built their relationship and their dominance in the house based on being a provider. So when they couldn't provide the way they used to provide, they lost headship. So the evolution of provision in the house has dramatically affected and changed headship in the home. So
yeah.
This one right here, providing, this is a headship question.
Exactly.
It's a huge headship question. And let me put this out. If you're listening to the program, I want to hear from you. If the man is not paying, let's just say, the majority of the bills in the house, is he the head? Talk to me. Is he the head? I'm going to ask Pastor Steve, but I want to hear from you out there. Is he the head? And if you say he is, tell me why. And if you say he's not, tell me why. Pastor Steve, I'd lay it at your feet.
Okay. Well, my dynamic is that in our household, I do not provide the lion's share of it. Hasn't been this way for, since my job sort of was offloaded. Okay. I was offloaded out of a job that I worked for, I was a journalist. Yes, true. Baltimore Sun. When we were there, we were one of the top newspapers in the whole world.
Wow.
At that point. I got an award that I got for being a part of that. We were all got a little plaque, and a little bonus. We got a little money from that too.
Get the money.
A little bonus, but at a certain point, the internet was starting to take over. They started offloading people. I was a person who was offloaded. And given the dynamic in Western culture today, my wife was on her way up in her business.
Okay.
And she's extremely gifted administratively and, really has a flair for numbers. She manages these things. So I told the story the other night to the men in the Bible college. It took me 17 years and running up a huge credit card debt to figure out that I don't have a mind for numbers and money.
Wow.
So I turned it over to my wife, and within 16 months, she erased the credit card debt that I had accumulated.
Wow.
And, so we've functioned that way. Now, am I the head? Yes, I am the head.
Okay.
And how does that happen? If there's a decision to be made, she brings it to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, we operate more as a team, as a unit, and wisdom is a sister, it says in the chapter that you know about, that we talk about this, the naive man wandering to the adulteress's corner. The beginning of that talks about let wisdom be your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how close you are to be. Like, you can, if you have sister wisdom in your life as a man, then it's really easier to relate to sister spouse, which is mentioned in Song of Solomon.
Yes.
So sister wisdom helps me to relate to sister spouse and to enjoy everything she brings to the table.
Well said.
And I'm not just talking that she's cooking. I'm talking everything that she brings to the table of organization in our house is really important. So you look at our dynamic, and she is basically, she's bringing home more bacon than I have in the last 20 years. The first 20, we used to joke about it. The first 20 years. Now, we had a dynamic. We had sort of an agreement. She watched some kids in the home as sort of a caregiver, allowed our kids to grow up. When our son went to college, that's when she went back to work full time. And then she,
she grew.
She grew, and she's had, a number of great positions in great companies in Baltimore. So that's an interesting dynamic. So I would say poetic leadership that comes from God is, did David listen to Abigail?
Absolutely.
He did. He didn't. He was on his way to kill a bunch of men, mm-hmm. you know, and he listened to her. Do I listen to my wife? Yes. Okay. Does she have more wisdom? Is wisdom a sister? Yes. Wisdom's a sister. And, if I listen to wisdom, then I'll be more aware of what, because I think it's great to think about this is that women know women.
That's
because like women is your sister. And if you listen to women, then you'll know the diabolical woman that's out there too. Cause there's this woman folly that wants to entrap you.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, women know women uh-huh. and, you know, and they know men too, but women know women better because mm-hmm. they're women and they can, I think that's a, you know, a very, you know, thing like, so like in the provision that is our household, there's provision where we tend to talk about the financial aspect and that thing. But what about the provision of just the general operation of the home? If, you know, if your woman has certain amount of iron, you should let her sharpen you with that iron.
Well said.
And that the home is going to be like, you know, it says, you know, she's going to sharpen you with what she's got mm-hmm. from God. She's gifted from God. Mm-hmm. And let's use that. Now, okay. So if God has ordered things a certain way, uh-huh. who are we to question God? There's a reason why he defined things a certain way. And you can call into question and you can talk these long words about, you know, if a woman has more skills, she should be do this. But if God made the order this way, mm-hmm. then there's a reason for that order. Mm-hmm. And we don't readily understand it. We just sort of, it's a test. It's a submission. Like, why did Adam suffer so much mm-hmm. because of what happened at the tree? It's because said, don't eat from that. Just believe what I told you about it. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you all the ramifications. If you would have just believed me about it, you wouldn't be in the, mm-hmm. in the place that you're in, but just believe me because I love you. Mm. And if you love me, you'll believe what I say. Mm-hmm. It's like, anyway,
I like what you said there as far as, cause this is the thing. It's like, I think the fluidity of that evolution in our culture was a bit easier.
Yeah.
Because in our culture, women's were becoming more socially involved.
Yes.
In our society. So the evolution of them actually working was easier. But in the third world, which is yeah. two-thirds of the world is
two-thirds of the world.
Don't it's forget like, that. Yeah. And the culture is a bully. And yeah. the culture says they live this verse. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, that he does not provide for his own, especially those of his own house, has denied the faith and worth in an infidel. They yell that verse at us.
Yeah.
1 Timothy 5, 8. No, no, no. And by the way, sadly, men built their homes in third world culture on their ability to provide materialistically, specifically financially. Yeah. And they bullied in their marriage and it built the wrong foundation. And then when the plan of God switched it, and she started, and he struggled with it. He struggles with yeah. it. And the woman does too, because she's been living in a marriage where, okay, I've been taught my whole marriage that the reason why you're the head of this house is because you're the financial provider. And now I'm providing equal or more than you. So that means I'm the head of the house.
Yeah.
And that's what's, that dynamic in the last 15 to 20 years in third world, globally,
it's a materialistic
yep.
benchmark, but and it's wrong.
It's pushing in the church.
I mean, yeah, it's true.
And it's like you said it right. But that word, when it says provide in 1 Timothy 5:8, you hit the nail on the head. That's not saying financially, right? The word there in the Greek, it actually translates out to it's more than just the idea. It means to actively care for.
There you go.
That's yeah. what that Greek word means for provide in 1 Timothy 5:8. It doesn't just mean like he's the provider because the bank account is right. Because imagine for a second, case in point, there was a couple that I counseled in a certain country in Africa, and the husband made U.S. about $1 million a year. Very mm-hmm. successful guy. And I had a conversation with his wife about the kids. And she said, the kids, he just buys them presents. He says, I don't want the money. I don't want the presents. I just want him to be around for his kids. He sees his kids like once every 6 months. He's like, the kids miss their father. So on paper,
he's providing.
But is he really actively caring for his kids? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
So imagine that. That's why sometimes I need God's complete mind about a thought. I can't just grab 1 Timothy 5:8 and say, okay, I'm paying, is the rent paid? Are the lights on? I'm doing the job. No.
Yeah.
To actively care for is the, at the heartbeat of provision. When Jesus Christ provides for you, is that because you have enough money? Or yeah. is he providing for you because the cross was not a financial provision.
Yeah.
It was a soul provision. I mean, the breath you breathe today. I mean, imagine if God gave you money and didn't give you breath.
Yeah.
You'd be rich and dead. Yeah. So the question is, what does it mean to be a provider? I mean, because we think first world, second world, third world, it's always financial. Yeah. Your mind gravitates there, right? And that's a huge struggle. That's still the number one reason for marital challenges today.
Finances.
It's always money. It's a lot about that provider role of money, right? It's about money. So the question is,
is that your identity?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like you're talking about like a materialistic identity that can mm-hmm. drive, like you said, drive someone to work to mm-hmm. death, but his kids never see him. Mm-hmm. Is that a provision? Is that providing? And you're saying, no, it's not providing. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. like, where's your identity? That's the question we all have to ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. Where is my identity wrapped mm-hmm. up in? Is it in the scriptures, relating to the word of God rightly, being filled with the Holy Spirit, and loving my wife and my home as Christ loved his church?
Mm-hmm. You would also say, if I'm a man and I know that I am actively caring for my family, how much my wife makes or how much I make is not so important.
No, it's our money.
Yeah, it's beautiful to say it's our money when you're not providing the majority.
That's true. That's true. Okay, thank you.
Hey,
busted.
Together.
I'm busted.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
I do ask permission. Well, I will say that because she is, you know, she has the because she has the wherewithal and the handle on everything that's going on financially.
But yours,
I ask permission.
But yours is not based upon quantity of finances. Yours is based on quality of stewardship.
That's right.
And that's a different conversation.
Yes, like, exactly.
I've seen couples where the husband makes more than the wife, but the wife handles the money because she's better with it.
Yeah, stewardship.
So
that's right.
Yours is more stewardship.
Yeah, we just go through my fingers. Yeah, exactly.
And at least my experience has been in every couple, there's a saver, there's a spender.
Yeah.
And it's not 100% clear, but it's usually one is willing to save more than the other one, mm-hmm. and one is willing to spend more than the other one. Mm-hmm. And God help you if you're both spenders. But anyway,
yeah.
But
provision. Here we go.
Provision would be the credit debt collection. But anyway, providing the role of a provider is it's physical. I mean, they need to feel there's a provision of physicality there, and that just talks about doing the best you can. And I think with a lot of men, it's not about quantity, it's about effort.
Mm.
Like,
okay.
There's some men that if she's going to do it, I'm not going to do it, right?
Yeah.
And there's certain dynamics that have to happen relationally in the relationship where, like you said, if I'm included in the conversation, and you're including me and I'm including you, then who brings the most is not as important as long as we both feel vested.
Yeah.
If I'm vested, if you're bringing 60% or 70%, but most marriages, okay, the effort matters. But if you're saying, well, I'm just living off what they're making, and like you said, even the other way around in relationships, men don't want to feel like that anymore because it's difficult.
Yeah.
Today's day and age, if you're a man and you can completely work, provide for everything financially, materially for your wife, God bless you. That's a rare person. That's a rare situation. But most of us, we call blended incomes.
Yeah.
And the blended incomes are never 50-50.
Yeah.
And you have some tough choices to make. But that's not the entire definition of your provision as a man. You're a provider of physical needs. There's emotional provision. There's spiritual provision, and that's the nurturing of Ephesians chapter 5. I think sometimes men lean too hard in the financial and not enough in the spiritual.
Yeah.
That's not just like, come on, we're going to church. That might be giving Christ to your wife or your girlfriend, whoever your significant other is, to be a spiritual covering. Do you know how many men walk this earth and they have no one that they look to as a spiritual covering?
Mm-hmm.
No one. And because you don't have a spiritual covering, guess what? You're not a spiritual covering.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be under a covering. And right, Matthew 10, mm-hmm. you should be under a covering to provide a covering. But you're not a covering without a covering.
Yeah.
Right? Because the authority as a covering is delegated. So where mm-hmm. does that come from? And then there's the provider as far as, like I said, not being slothful.
Yeah.
We live in a culture where people say, if I don't have to, I'm not going to, because she does everything. Right. But that's not the Bible's not endorsing lazy men. The Bible's not endorsing sluggards. The number one animal in the book of Proverbs is the ant.
Yeah.
And what's the number one tactic that's mentioned about the ant? He works.
Yeah. He's diligent. That's right.
So that. Why does Solomon and the writers of the Proverbs keep saying and because he wants to know that in your discipleship there's a diligence.
Yeah.
The diligence. And I can't hide behind Jesus and be lazy. I remember years ago here someone came to me and they said, "Well, I'm just going to go to all the raps, just hang out and just be on campus and hang out. I'm just going to be on all the raps and just be." I said, "Well, that's not necessarily God. As much as I want you to come to the raps, you should also be able to be responsible and take care of yourself." And then lo and behold, that person's mother called and said, "You people are convincing so-and-so." We didn't convince that person not to work. We actually encouraged them to be responsible. They had made a decision not to do that, and we don't support it. But to be diligent in your discipleship, that's the key.
Yeah, you know, Proverbs is a great book. I mean, this is... we had a man come here, a great man, Mark DeMoss. He's got a lot of wisdom, but he talked about reading through Proverbs one chapter a day. And then, you get to the end and you find this Proverbs 31 about the virtuous woman and who can find her. She's far above precious jewels. A man safely trusts in her, that kind of thing. There's a lot of freedom there. We see entrepreneurship. We see working with the hands. We see providing for the family. We see opening her mouth in wisdom. And she also understands the end game. You know, it says she laughs at things to come. Mm-hmm. And that is maybe one of the most important verses there. And especially in our church, because we're going to start talking about Revelation in a couple of weeks in our services. That's what our pastor has told us, that we're going to start. Pastor Schaller is going to start talking about the book of Revelation for us. Can you enjoy and rejoice in knowing that God is going to tie all things together in His divine order? You know, fools, sluggards. You're right. Fools and sluggards. Ants. Mm-hmm. Ants is the one. You know, be an ant, right? Yep. Be an ant, and and be diligent, and ant goes out and it brings things back to the colony. Now I understand that those are the female ants going out. Someone told me that and corrected me. I said, okay, the female ants are the ones that go out, and then they're the male ants are the soldier ants. I said, okay, well, you just fractured. But diligence is diligence, whether it's happening in the man or the woman. We need to have a diligent kind of mindset. And I think, you know, we've sort of understand the protection and the provision, you know, really comes from above.
Yep. And you get a good picture of that in the Paul's analogy of the first and second Adam. Where did the first Adam fail? He was not a good protector in the sense that he allowed Eve to be enticed.
Yeah.
And if you read the Hebrew there, it wasn't the first encounter. It seems like there was an ongoing investment from the serpent into Eve.
Wow.
And Adam allowed that. First Adam allowed that, and it was okay. Evidently I'm going to make the assumption that he was somewhat aware that it was happening, because what was hidden from him in the garden, and that it was okay with him, unbeknownst of the consequences of not properly protecting her from the bad relationship. I think as a man with your kids and with your wife, you have to guard against those and discern those things and be observant and watchful and diligent, actually. Also, number two, I would also say, since he didn't provide protection, he failed a little bit at Eve as a provider. He provided her with love, but he allowed her to be introduced to other people. So I think we learn a lot from the first Adam about not how to be a good protector, not how to be a good provider. But in the second Adam, we find our example. In the second Adam, this is the model for the Christian man. The second Adam is that we have the protection of the Spirit, and we led by the Spirit to be protectors. And we also provide in the Spirit, and we are guided by God in how we provide for our families and our marriages.
That's right. He told the truth, and he also shed tears.
Amen.
Jesus was both we protect, and we also provide, and space. Be present, men, and if you're present, create a capacity for provision and protection.
Amen.
So, Pastor Rinaldo, I think we did it. I'm Pastor Steve Angelonis. Pastor Rinaldo Brown has been with me. This has been the Grace Hour Show. You can subscribe to our program on several platforms, and we encourage you to do so, and we thank you for all those who have subscribed. Jehu Vandiver has been our engineer today. We thank God for him.
You do.
And his diligence in making sure that we're lined up right and in the frame and the camera. Hi, there we go. And our microphones are working. So join the rest of the discussion this week. It happens every day. Thank you, everyone. Grace Hour Show, signing off.